City Detroit or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Welcome to Stories from the Heart. I'm your host, Sandra McDevitt. Today in Stories from the Heart, the story of a family about to lose the home they've been living in for 11 years. The daughter of the family has what she thinks is a fail-proof remedy. What is this remedy? To find out, stay tuned to another charming story on Stories from the Heart. A little two-story frame house stood at the crossroads near the cultivated farmlands belonging to adjoining estates. For 11 years, it had been the only home John Robertson and his family knew. By this time, they should have owned the cottage, so the neighbors said, if there had been any sort of proper management. The Robertsons did not own much of anything. The furniture of the place was of antiquated pattern. Their clothing was shabby. They looked as if they had fallen behind in a race of life. But they had one great asset in their daughter, Betty, who was 7 years old. She was worth ever so much more than a house and fine furniture and fashionable clothing. At least her father and mother thought so. For Betty, they were carefully laying aside every possible dollar, for they had determined that the child should have a good education. One day, which happened to be the last day of July, as Maria Robertson was standing at the door of the cottage, wistfully looking over the well-tilled fields that sloped away in every direction and wishing that she and her husband might call one tiny plot their very own. A spruce-appearing young man stepped briskly up to the low fence that surrounded her house and removed his hat. "Mrs. Robertson, I believe?" "Yes," Maria answered. "I am Harold Dayton," the young man said, "the present owner of this cottage." He waited for the effect of the words on Mrs. Robertson. The effect was startling. Owner of the cottage, why, the owner, since they had come to make it their home, had been a kindly disposed gentleman who lived in the city, who had allowed them to remain in comparative peace and security. Seeing that he had amazed her, the young man went on to explain. "Mr. Holliston, the former owner, died suddenly, as perhaps you are not aware. He left debts, which were rather beyond his liabilities. As a result, this cottage has come to the hands of my brother and myself, and we propose to..." He paused, seeing the fearful look on the woman's face. He noted that there were deep lines in her forehead and that her hands were worn by hard toil. Of course, all this was nothing to him, he reasoned. "To do what?" asked Maria. She dared not think what was to come. "We propose to tear it down and utilize the land for something else, possibly a tenement block, brick of course. It'll be an asset to the village here, which doesn't look too progressive." "But we've lived here for 11 years," Maria said. "I'm sure I wouldn't know where to turn if you were to put us out. We've had lots of sickness and other troubles. They never come singly." "But you wouldn't turn us out into the street. Surely you wouldn't." "My dear madam, I'm very sorry to tell you that you'll have to find a home elsewhere by at least 1 month from today. It will be a disappointment to us that we must wait so long. But of course, we want to give you time to find another place." "But I can't find another place," said Maria. "There's not a vacant tenement in the town. And of course, I couldn't live anywhere else. I couldn't live in the city with all the noise and dust and city ways. And there's Betty, who'd break her heart to leave the meadows and the trees and the flowers and everything. The city's no place for a child that's always lived in the country." Harold Dayton, the joint owner of the Robertson's cottage, shrugged his shoulders impatiently. "I'm very sorry indeed. But 1 month from today, we expect to have the building records on the spot. I advise you to begin looking out for another place immediately." He turned from the gate, bowing with exquisite courtesy to Maria. Things had seemed bad enough before, but now it was the very last straw. How was she to break the news to her husband? It was only when Betty was safely tucked away in her little cot that night that Maria confided the whole unhappy matter to her husband. John Robertson sat with his head bowed in his hands. He realized he had not been as successful in life, that is, as success as the world understands it. But in misfortune and disappointment, he had been brave and generous. He had been submissive to divine providence, and that things had gone against him was not to his discredit. And, like his wife, he had loved his poor cottage, which was home. "We'll have to put the best foot forward for Betty," Maria said. All this time, Betty, unable to sleep, had been crouched on the stairs, a silent but interested listener to the conversation of her parents. Betty did not realize that she was eavesdropping. She only knew that her parents were in trouble, and that her little home was threatened by some misfortune. When the child crept silently back to her room, she did not immediately go to sleep. She sat on the bed and talked with a beautiful lady whose picture adorned the wall. "You mustn't let it happen," said Betty to the lady. "You mustn't. You can't let it happen because I'm going to say one Hail Mary for you to fix everything all right. Don't forget. Of course, I know you've got ever so many other things to do, but you must not forget this." In the days that followed, Mr. Robertson and his wife trudged over the town in the vague hope that somewhere they might find a suitable house. Alas, they found nothing suited to their needs and purse. One day, they went to the city, leaving Betty alone. Across the way, a good neighbor had volunteered to keep a vigilant eye on the child, so her parents had gone away satisfied, although in a most unhappy frame of mind. They dreaded the thought of going to the city. They had always thought of it as a place where one could not see the sky, where there was no grass, no flowers, and where people jostled against one another. When they had gone, Betty sat on the front step nursing Soapine, the gray and white cat, and whispering secrets to her. The little girl happened to look up and saw a man coming in at the gate. "This is the little Robertson girl, I believe. I would like to speak to your mother and father." "But they're not at home," replied Betty. "They've gone to the city to look for a new house for us, because our house is going to be torn down or something, and we've got to go away. And we haven't any money to go, and I can't ever play in the meadow or pick flowers." "Oh, they aren't at home," said the man. "So you don't like the idea of living here?" The child shook her head vigorously. The smile on his lips yielded to a more sober expression. "But perhaps we won't have to go after all," Betty confided to the stranger. "Why? What makes you think that?" "Because I've said one Hail Mary to the Blessed Mother, and she's sure to help us. I always get what I want when I do that." "You do?" The man was frankly amused. But Betty was quite serious. "I suppose you've never tried it, or you'd know it's true. Of course, you'd have to be a Catholic to know, though." "Oh, and you do?" "Yes, and no matter how hard they try to put us out, the Blessed Virgin will take care of us." "And you have to say only one Hail Mary?" "Only one, but you say it hard and as ever you can." "But if one wasn't a particular friend of this lady, would she answer just the same?" "Oh, she might. Oh, no, she would. I'm sure she would," replied Betty. The man went down the white dusty road, saying he would call again when he hoped to find Betty's parents at home. Now, in a great office at the top of the skyscraper in the busy city, the man described the day's happenings to his younger brother. "Look here, Hal. I'm thinking that it wouldn't be much of a proposition for us to build a way out at Pottsville. I looked the place over today, and I don't think much of it." His brother was frankly surprised. "Why, I thought it was you who suggested the thing. I think it would be a profitable plan myself." "Well, I don't," replied the other. "If you've no objections, we'll look into the matter of that chain store plant on Highland Avenue. Pottsville's too far out, anyhow." "Then what will we do with the Robertson cottage, then?" "Oh, if you like, sell your share of it to me. I rather think I'll fix it up with modern improvements and leave the family where they are. Of course, if the father got a decent job, he could afford a higher rent, and it would be an easy matter for us to land him something suitable. I'll attend to it myself." Harold Dayton was frankly much surprised, but he was used to his elder brother's sudden whims. "Peculiar chap," he confided to a friend whom he met later in the day. "Anyone would think he had a particular reason for wanting to hang on to that Pottsville cottage, but it's all the same to me." Wilfred Dayton did have a very particular reason for wanting to hang on to the Pottsville cottage. It was the Hail Mary. He had never heard the words of this beautiful prayer, which was little Betty's sole armament against a busy firm of mortgagees in the city, but he was very much interested in it. That night, when he was calling on a charming young lady, he told her of Betty, and there was active chivalry in the honor of a lady whom he did not know. "Of course," he said, "I really can't say that I thought much of the proposition, although my brother did. But anyhow, I didn't have the heart to resist the trust of that little girl. I somehow feel that her one Hail Mary may be a more powerful key than the rest of us realize to unlock treasures undreamed of in our philosophy." And Helene Martin, whose fervent desire was for the conversion of this young man to whom she had given her heart, replied, "You know what Tennyson says about prayer, Wilfred, and the great theologian Suarez once said that he would sacrifice all his learning for the value of one Hail Mary." "Helene," the young man whispered, "why don't you teach it to me?" 6 months later, Helene Dayton and her husband paused before the gate of the Robertson cottage where little Betty and Sopane were merrily disporting themselves in a snowdrift. The cottage itself, newly painted and considerably renovated and remodeled, sat proudly at the forks of the two roads as of old. But its appearance contrasted most favorably with Wilfred's earlier remembrance of it. Maria Robinson, in a clean apron, met them at the door. Away in the city, her husband was engaged as an overseer of the men working at the Highland Avenue stores. "So, this is Betty," said Helene, clasping the child in her arms. But the little girl could not understand just why the sweet lady held her and gazed earnestly into her face. Then Betty took Helene onto her own room and pointed out the first evening star peeping in through the window. "It's like one Hail Mary," she said. And Helene fancied that the beautiful lady on the wall smiled.
Full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Thank you for joining us on Stories from the Heart. Today's story, Betty's Hail Mary, was written by Mabel Farnham and published in Ave Maria magazine. For a copy of this or any of my stories, email Sandra at avemariaradio.net. Stories from the Heart is recorded in the studios of Ave Maria Radio. I'm Sandra McDevitt. May God bless the rest of your day.
Missed a show? Not sure if it came from Ave Maria Radio? Go to AveMariaRadio.net. A list of shows and hosts are there. And if you find the show you're looking for, you can hear the whole thing again by going through the Ave Maria Radio audio archive.